Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your deeply principled descent of music news and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica. Hello. Hello, John Fraelis.
Hello, John Caramonica.
That makes three of us saying hello.
It's true.
It's John Fraelis. It's John Caramonica. And it's Adele.
Adele, indeed.
Oh, my God. I think her last name is Adkins, actually. No, Adele is back. Adele is everywhere.
Dominating the known universe.
After being nowhere for quite some time, Adele has returned with a single, Hello, and now, out today, an album called 25. John Fraelis, you were one of the few people who got to bask in the glory of Adele in an in-person way prior to all this hubbub. Take me to London. Tell me a little bit about the vibe when you're in London sitting with Adele. What's going on there?
Well, we did this interview October 20th, which was 2 days after the advert, Hello teaser advert. She had not yet even revealed that it was her.
It was a 30-second advertisement during the X Factor, or maybe a minute advertisement during the X Factor, just playing the audio. But obviously, people by that point had figured out Adele's back.
She was in the middle of just ramping up this campaign. We met at the Soho House on Dean Street in London.
Sure.
Which is a...
Where you're a member, obviously.
Yeah. Neither is she, however. She had not been there before.
Mm-hmm.
It was the place where the management could get a private, quiet room at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday.
Okay.
I was told by a number of people who work with her is exceedingly punctual. You will get to the interview on time, and she will be there half an hour early. Only
my.
She was late.
Oh, no.
And she was freaked out about it. She was like, I'm so sorry to be late. I'm never late. I don't know. I kind of think of her as this very English type, this sort of bustling maiden aunt kind of type
mm-hmm.
that you would see in an English drawing room comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Except she's also Adele, and she's also very focused on her music and on the details of making an album. She comes in, she gives me a hug, we sit down, and basically she starts talking. She is not shy.
She doesn't need prompts.
She does not need prompts. She needs just like a question about what she's interesting and she'll just go. I mean, she's exactly the way she is when she's on stage.
We think a lot about pop stars who sort of go dark for a while. They go absent. They disappear. And there's usually these sort of ominous narratives that get attached to it. There's a lot of consternation about missed opportunities. But what's sort of striking about what she told you, and I'd like you to sort of expand upon that, which the way she described to you is basically the complete opposite of the normal pop star disappears narrative.
No, she had a kid. She wanted to raise the kid. The thing was, though, she was also, while she was probably in the midst of sleepless motherhood, she said actually Remedy is about being kept up all night in the early stages of motherhood,
mm-hmm.
but still feeling all this love for the child. It's a wholesome narrative. It's like, you know, I'm not showing myself at clubs. I'm not leaving the kid with the nanny. I'm like home with my child, bonding.
Mm-hmm.
So it is the opposite of the, you know, rock star disappears to excess. She disappeared to wholesomeness. But she also said, I have to lead an actual life to be relatable. I don't want to make an album about fame because fame is boring.
Right. And this is where, I mean, and we'll get to the album specifically.
This is, makes her kind of lovable to me.
But this is also like she is, you know, probably of any contemporary pop star, probably the most aggressively first person in terms of songwriting and in terms of plain spokenness. I think there are people who live in the first person, but who maybe are writing more elaborate conceptual work or metaphors or da-da-da. Adele feels she's a literalist. And
yes.
I think this thing that you're talking about, to me, it's like, oh, if she really wants to be relatable or she wants to write about that kind of stuff, maybe she had to go away. Man, now maybe it's going to be another 5 years. I did think it was striking. We were both at the Radio City show, which was taped for an NBC TV special, I believe. We were both at that Radio City show the other night, and she thanked the crowd for letting her have time away to be with her child,
right.
Which I thought was very striking.
And when I interviewed her, actually, part of the stuff that's on the cutting room floor is that she said she's talked to other stars who are frantically putting stuff out because they're afraid people will forget them.
Oh. Do tell.
She didn't say who. She very discreetly did not say who, but she said...
I'd like to hear more about that, Adele.
She said, if you come back with something good, people will remember you anyway. if you come back with something bad. So let the missed opportunities go.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you really deeply crave all that attention all the time, you can take.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Jeff.
Yes.
Do you get the sense that her perspective on her music and the sort of music that was appropriate for her to make underwent any evolutionary changes during these 5 years?
Well, she talked about staying away, actually, and she talked about listening to a lot of 70s singer-songwriters, which you can definitely hear on the album.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then she talked about wanting to be modern. So, I mean, the album's so bifurcated. It's got three basic piano and voice ballads or guitar and voice ballads, mm-hmm. three decidedly unproduced songs.
Yep.
And then it's got these big bombastic rockers, which mm-hmm. she also has the voice to handle. And mm-hmm. then she has Hello, which is both of them.
Right.
Hello is like the piano ballad in the verse and the big bombastic song in the chorus.
She does have a skill at kind of like making what's fundamentally a fairly minimal song basically fill a room like a gas would fill a room. Like just every available corner, it just like creeps into. It just really, it's almost like suffocating in a weird way. You talked a lot about in the piece what her affect is like and what her manner is like. And obviously we saw that at Radio City as well. But I sometimes wonder if the Adele of the songs, while I believe in the feelings, is sort of a refined character subset of her actual personality. Because she's much bubblier, it seems, in her life, much funnier. She seems to have a lightness to her when you hear her talk in an interview or sort of off the cuff than is conveyed in these songs.
Well, there's a little of both, because she talked about making 21, she was so miserable. It was pouring out of her because she was such a wreck, and she was kind of deliberately wallowing in it to get the songs.
Right.
She wouldn't let her friends take her out. She wouldn't let anybody cheer her up. She was like, No, I'm gonna be a drama queen. But this did not have to be drawn out of her. This is what was on her mind. And in fact, I talked to Paul Epworth, her producer, who said it was easier writing 21 because she was so charged up with emotion.
Tapping the vein, basically, yeah.
And with this, it took her much longer to figure out what she wanted to say, who she was. There wasn't that immediate rush of heartbroken rage.
Although much of the album is about not quite rage, but at least the resolution of something ugly, the end of something disappointing, apart from the last song. I mean, this is basically an Adele record. I mean, you know, let's not call it something it's not.
People will be crying.
Yeah, including Adele. Like, I had a moment when when she got to All I Ask at the Radio City show. I might have went there. Could have happened.
No picks, didn't happen.
Let's talk a little bit about the music. I sometimes feel with Adele, producers, I feel like, try to get out of the way of her sometimes. You don't want to be the person that, like, brought Adele down or that somehow interfered with Adele.
Well,
I'm curious about her choices.
Well, I think it's more like she bends them to her will. Because you have these guys who have made umpty gazillion hits. You have Greg Kurstin, who's worked with Pink. You have Max Martin, who's, you know, worked with everybody. Epworth has done a lot of various stuff. You have Ryan Tedder from One Republic. You have these these guys who people bring on as, okay, give me that.
Right.
And instead, she seems to set them off their regular game. I talked to both Ryan Tedder and Paul Epworth. They have to sort of sell her their songs. The Ryan Tedder song, You Hate, and I think is kind of a sweet, benevolent, outpouring remedy.
Mm-hmm.
He brought the word remedy. He brought this sort of, to me, kind of Billy Joel piano rolling sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said to her, what's it about? She had been fighting, writing about being a mother in love with her son. She finally just let it out. And that, she said, was the turning point for the album, because she hadn't figured out what she wanted to write about.
Mm-hmm.
He had to pitch it to her in a way. You know, here's what I've got. You know, what are you going to put in it of yourself?
Do you get the sense that him and Epworth and the other folks involved approached working with Adele differently than they would have approached working with another artist?
I asked them both, and they all say, you know, every artist is different. Yeah, exactly. Crassly, I guess they know it's a big payday.
Sure. Kids got to eat. Kids got to go to college.
I mean, you do want to be an artist and facilitate the song that's going to reach the most people in the way that it touches them most.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Adele is a big tsunami of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's made her the multi-million seller.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to get in the way of that. You don't want to gimmick it up. You don't want to formularize it. I mean, you want to just let that avalanche flow and get out of the way.
A thing that I was curious about, there's Max Martin song on this record, which does not sound like a Max Martin song, except at the chorus. But what I thought, what it reminded me of is when I was doing the interviews for The Weeknd Story earlier this year, I talked to Savin, who's one of Max's main guys. And the thing that Savin said that I think did not make the piece, I think it was in the piece and maybe it got cut at some point, was that they were getting, after those Weeknd records started to come out, that they started getting calls from basically legit super famous people who were like, we want The Weeknd. We basically want you to come and polish what we do. Like, we don't want to show up on your terms a la Ariana or whatever. Like, you know, but we want to show up and have you kind of polish the thing that we already do.
Right.
He was like, you'd be shocked at some of the calls we're getting. And I was like, I'd love to know who those calls are. And of course, he didn't tell me. But now I'm beginning to think that Adele might have been one of those calls. If you listen to the chorus and the structures in that song, that feels very Max. But I feel like Adele is like very deliberately when she's playing acoustic guitar and she leaves the studio comment and like to talking to Max. That to me is like, I'll come to you, but you don't run me. You're not.
No,
the boss
absolutely.
Of me.
I mean, yeah. I think she steamrollers all of them.
Yeah.
Which is great. Sidelight on that song. That guitar lick is something she's been playing since she's 15.
Mm-hmm.
She used to use it as the backdrop to Wonderful World.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's something that she's sort of had in her arsenal for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, you know, got on a record with Max Martin.
All saving our sweet spots for Max Martin, I suppose.
Exactly.
Are there other things that happened sort of in the course of the interview process that really stuck in your head that either did or did not make the piece, but that felt very sort of essential to her character?
Well, we mostly just sat and talked. I mean, at one point, she ran off to check on her son because he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
She was very eager to talk. I mean, I think she'd been bottled up.
Yeah.
I think she had done an ID magazine interview.
Yeah.
Which I went back and looked at and didn't have a lot of the same talking points.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a rock star these days, you go to your media coach and you...
Yeah, you say the same things.
You say the same things.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting that. But I also got this feeling, the sorrow that she unleashes, the tears that she unleashes, they're in her still. I mean, she talks a lot about being insecure. She talks a lot about staying up all night worrying. She talks a lot about... One thing she had figured out was this album is on about being on the cusp between childhood and adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
She says, you know, any day I'm going to wake up and I'm an adult. As a working mother, she is an adult.
Mm-hmm.
You have the feeling she's still working this stuff out in her head. I mean, she misses being with her friends as she sings on the album. I mean, it is, you know, what she says is what she sings.
Did she exude a kind of contentment, personal contentment?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Mm.
The English are different. You know this. I mean, the English have this air.
Oh, no, the letters we're going to get from England. Oh, my gosh.
There's a certain British self-deprecation.
Yeah, sure.
That is built into the culture.
Yeah.
She talked about the song The River Lee, which is a river that runs through her neighborhood, Tottenham, where she grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And she really sort of delved into it. I mean, it's all about being from this downscale neighborhood and then going back to it and feeling like it's still within her, but she doesn't belong there anymore. You can see there's this sort of class struggle going on between being posh now and being from Tottenham. There's missing her childhood. And all this stuff is still churning in her. It didn't feel like a polished, it didn't feel like a set piece. It felt like stuff she was still working out in her head.
Shouts to Tottenham Court Road. Great road. Feel like that's where I bought my Sweet Like Chocolate CD single in 1999. Peace to all my UK garage lovers in Tottenham. Let's listen to another song from Adele's 25. Let's get into a little Water Under the Bridge. If you're gonna let me down gently. Don't pretend that you don't want me. Our love ain't water under the bridge. If you're gonna let me down gently. Don't pretend that you don't want me. Our love ain't water under the bridge. So that's Water Under the Bridge, sort of. That's a Kirsten production, correct?
Greg Kirsten.
Yeah, Greg Kirsten produced three or four songs on
three
this record.
Songs.
Kirsten is the guy who I think blends in the most as a producer.
Which is his general modus operandi.
Right. I mean, he's a very, very flexible producer without maybe a signature idea.
Well, or without a formula, or maybe he's just got or, the.
Well, sorry, my cynicism is running headlong into your optimism.
Yes, there you go. She talked about working with him, and she said she's got a really short attention span, and so she'd walk in and she'd say, "Oh, I feel like a piano song today. I feel like a bass song. I feel like a guitar song." And he'd say, "Okay, let's go." Then they'd work on something for 2 hours, and she didn't like it, and she'd want to do something else, and he'd say, "Fine, I'm ready." Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just like a he's the catcher of your dreams in your Major League Baseball game.
And I've got to imagine, given that she's coming back after a fairly long time, like that's probably a very useful approach because she doesn't seem like someone who wants a bunch of ideas visited upon her. She
right.
wants to be able to.
Mm-hmm. I think she was definitely steering the ship.
Mm-hmm. What's your feeling about the Kirsten songs on the record?
I like them all. I mean, Hello is one of the other ones. He just gets out of her way, but he does make instruments sound beautiful.
Yep.
He's like Mr. Analog Keyboard. I talked to someone else he produced, Jimena Sarañana. Mm-hmm. She said that his home studio is just every old keyboard you've ever thought about
sure.
is there. Mm-hmm. So he's very into organic sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But he can also make things go boom.
What do you feel about, to me on this record, there's a real tension between the songs, say the Kirsten records, and then other songs with other writers and producers that sound less like Adele songs. Like the Kirsten records sound like Adele songs, which is such a trite thing to say, and I'm so loath to even describe it this way. But there is a sort of, I almost want to say there's like an obstructionist quality to Adele making records. Like she's so singular and so specific in her vocal approach that a guy like Kirsten is probably the optimal person to work with her. Because it's like, I'm just going to go in and I'm going to work around you. But I think there's sort of almost like a 50-50 split on this record between songs of that nature and songs where it's like, oh, this sounds like blank. This sounds like someone else showed up and gave them their song, not someone else showed up and wrote an Adele record. And that to me feels like a real tension on the album.
I'm not sure I agree with you because she still sounds like herself to me. She also sounds different on this album than she did on 21
mm-hmm.
and
true.
Very different. I mean, on 19, she's doing Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
And she said so, actually, to me. I mean, she's not hiding it.
Oh, yeah. You left all the good nuggets out. That's good.
It was going to be a 10,000-word story.
Yeah,
otherwise.
Well, you know. Well,
and actually, we're going to run some B-roll online.
Hey, all right.
On this album, she's also not doing Aretha. She's also not doing soul music on this song, on this album. She's doing Diva. I mean, she's doing Barbra Streisand,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Celine Dion Diva. And she's doing just this big, open, land hard on the melody and, you know, sing it from mm-hmm. the bottom of your toes. And that's different. I mean, if you go back and listen to 21, 21 has a lot more harshness, something like Rolling in the Deep. It's got a lot more rasp that she throws in at the right place.
Yeah, yeah.
And this doesn't do that. She thought about it. I mean, I asked her. She
okay.
said, I didn't want to make a revivalist soul record. I didn't want to make a 60s-sounding record. She said the two poles of this record are 1970s songwriting. She mentioned actually Karen Carpenter, who is right at the beginning of that Tobias
yeah.
Gesso song,
yep.
which I think she had more of a hand in than you do.
I can't hear you.
But
can't hear you, JP, because you look like a movie.
That might
sound like a song.
That might be his part. It's true. but the low vocal at the beginning, that's Karen Carpenter.
I literally went back and reread what I had written about Tobias Gesso Jr. while I was writing this, and there's a thing that I said where it's like sometimes when he's singing a syllable, he sounds like he's slipping on a banana peel midway through, and that's like literally exactly what she does on the chorus of that song. So I just was like,
not an image I want to keep in my head.
No, and yet it's stuck in my ear, unfortunately. But okay.
Anyway, that song's called When We Were Young. She
yes.
announced it at Radio City as her favorite song ever of what she's written.
She also said she's a fan. One of her like 9 tweets is about how much she likes Tobias Gesso Jr. Like, you know, she's very clearly that mode of songwriting. You know, to me, it's a little more Randy Newman, but I see the Karen Carpenter in it. Like that mode of songwriting clearly speaking to her. Do you feel like this reflects a mutability in Adele? Because I think this is another thing we don't quite agree on,
yeah.
which is like, I think your optimistic take on it is that this reflects, I don't want to say more mature, but a more diverse, wide-ranging Adele. And my perspective is that it's sort of a...
adulterated Adele?
Yes, like damaging to the core brand.
I mean, I'm glad she's out not to repeat herself. She actually said Kirsten was one of the people suggested for 21. And she turned down the idea then because she figured he's already been on so many things. What could she bring to it?
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, she changed her mind for this and she was happy she did.
Mm-hmm. Did she talk to you much about why she chose Max Martin?
Well, she told ID, which I'd already read, but she told ID that she and Ryan Tedder were sitting around somewhere and Taylor Swift's Trouble comes on the radio.
Stop. True?
True. And she said, "Who's Max Martin?" And of course, Ryan Tedder looks at her as if you don't know that Max Martin has written every hit.
I feel really vindicated because, like, in my piece, I say that that song clearly has some kind of debt to Trouble. And I didn't – that's great. I had no idea.
Good ears. The man with the ears.
Plugged into the Matrix. All right. All right. I see all the numbers dropping from the sky. That's phenomenal. Maybe it's not so interesting because if she genuinely doesn't know who Max Martin is, she doesn't understand why I Knew You Were Trouble is actually an important song in the Max Martin oeuvre. You know what I mean?
Right.
If she knew who Max Martin was, she would actually know that was a way more poignant choice to be inspired by than a bunch of stuff he had done previously.
Right. She knew what she wanted. I mean, she wanted that particular quality.
And also she wanted to sing like Taylor Swift on the chorus, apparently. No shots. I love that song, but it's very much what it is. Also, it's funny because when you think about that record, Send My Love to Your New Lover, it is very much like the British version of a Taylor Swift kiss-off song.
Right.
It's decorous. It's decent. It's like not that – it's like pretending to be snide, but it's like not actually that snide.
It's pretty snide.
Yeah, for Adele, certainly it's very snide.
Well, not after 21.
Well, sure. In this context, it doesn't feel quite as bratty as maybe a Taylor record would, but it has some of those elements.
But that's the thing about Adele. I mean, that's why Adele is so needed. Adele is a voice for people who aren't teenagers and yet are still going through all these struggles. I mean, it's why everybody brought their mom to the Adele concert at Radio City.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. A lot of dancing moms right around me in my section. A lot of turned up moms.
But those people need music.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, they're not getting it from Rihanna. They're not getting it from all of these like robot girls who are invincible.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some
shots.
Of them,
shots, JP.
Maybe some are getting it from country music, but not. But country women are more sassy these days, and they're more regional these days. Adele is sort of pan-regional, so she's filling this giant void.
Why is she able to do that? I agree with you, but I'm curious about why. Because it's interesting to hear you say that she was consciously not trying to make a 60s soul soul revival record. Because what that also says to me is, she's trying to not make a record that's going to be discussed or defined by race. That she wants to make something that's not in a race genre conversation. She wants to make something that's different from that. Because especially you look at her.
You might be stretching there. I don't know.
I don't know.
From the way she was talking, I think it's more like musicianly inflection. I don't think race is part of the discussion.
I'm not sure if it's consciously part of the discussion, but also if you're trying to make a record that is not going to get pigeonholed as such and such a thing. Maybe it's conscious or maybe it's subconscious, but maybe that's part of the thinking.
I'll give you a definite maybe on that. It's more like vocal attack.
Mm-hmm.
A singer thinking about how her voice is going to be preserved on that digital 50 million track recording.
Mm-hmm.
She actually said an interesting thing to me. There's a song, Million Miles Away, which is a incredibly weepy and to many people moving ballad.
Good song.
It's a circle of fifths, which is like chord progression, autumn leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Her North London accent, TH is like F.
Yep.
So when you say
thank you,
throne, it's frown.
Yep.
And she said, I really had to think about how I was going to sing the word throne.
Mm.
Life was like a party to be thrown.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, I have a universal audience. I want to use a universal voice.
Wow.
And she sings it throne very clearly and distinctly.
Wow, what a major idea.
Well, I mean,
major.
That's how closely she thinks about it. So, I mean, that's why I think the soul revival thing is more about, you know, how she's going to curve each note more than what do I mean sociologically.
Sure. Wow, that's fascinating. Not that she doesn't seem like someone who's aware, because I think she is, but on that microscopic detail.
Yeah.
Because I think some singers would say, well, I'm from North London, so I want to sound exactly like where I'm from. Like, I want to say frown. I want to say fank. That's beautiful that she really went there. If you could sort of distill down Adele's relatability and her universality, because like we said, there's a lot of a very wide range in the age and the demographics of the audience. It's something that, like you say, a lot of moms in the crowd, older women really connect. My mom was super pissed that I did not bring her to the concert.
You didn't?
It's complicated. It's complicated. What is it about Adele's presentation and structural approach that allows for that or encourages that, that wide-ranging listening?
She does what pop does, which is to sort of stay out of specificity.
Yeah.
She's not specifically English. She's not specifically young.
Right.
The funny thing about this album, she's 27 now. The album's called 25 because she started it 2 years ago. Though she really did most of it in the last year and a half. I don't know the exact numerical data. Mm-hmm.
We'll wait for the 25 box set in 10 years with all the detailed studio notes.
Indeed. But she's 27, and half of the songs on this album about how when she was young.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I talked to her, she said she was feeling nostalgic for when she was a carefree kid and could just hang out and be with her friends. There's already this sense of mortality and time slipping away,
mm-hmm.
which is something that I think an older audience is thinking about. She's not being a teenager. She's not getting into catfights. She's not one-upping her. I mean, even Send My Love to Your New Lover,
yeah.
the Max Martin song, that could be a 20-something, that could be a 40-something.
Sure. She's a very, and we talked about this a little bit in the beginning, like, she's so first person, but I think what you're saying really resonates for me because she's like the least specific first person singer ever. She's like only singing in the first person, and yet everything is completely universalizable. Like there's the level of detail is weirdly not that high for someone who's constantly sort of singing in the first person. And I think that is something that I think allows a lot of people to imprint themselves upon her songs. And also, I think her vocal approach, the way that she does fill a space, the way that she does that her vocals are, it's like they're painted on with a very wide brush. Like she's not pointillistic as a singer at all, not nimble.
Well, I don't know. She's pretty nimble in All I Ask.
Yes, that is probably, and maybe that's why it feels so different to me than most of the other songs on this record. John Perales, do you also love All I Ask, or do you just want to hear about how much I love All I Ask? Those are your two choices.
I have a third choice. I have an anecdote. I asked her about this song. She said, I was with Bruno Mars, and we're both a little soppy, and we decided to write the soppiest song we could.
I mean, and it worked.
It definitely works.
It's tacky. It's great.
No, it's not tacky.
I'm not saying that as a negative thing. I'm saying that as a positive thing.
It's lachrymose.
Okay.
But she said they really wanted to like push it and push it. And she also, this was one of the songs she said, this is the only song actually, she said, it's not something that's happened to me, but it's a feeling we've had. And the important line in the song is, it matters how this ends.
Mm.
The last memory of the romance is the one you're going to have forever.
Mm-hmm.
I was also thinking though, that this song is also, she's been doing the song Bonnie Raitt made famous, I Can't Make You Love
Me. Yeah, exactly.
This is that same thing. It's the last night together. Please make it good.
Mm-hmm. To me, the line on that song that really jumps out is, give me a memory I can use, which is so, it's almost dirty, not sexually dirty, but it's like emotionally dirty. It's tragic that you're pleading for this thing that you want to take with you that basically you want to use to either comfort or torment you in later recollection. It's a really dark thing. Bruno Mars and the Speezington, I mean, this is an example unlike, say, the Gesso record, which like feels like a Gesso record and like does not sound like Adele. This is a record that sounds in part like a Bruno Mars record. There's like a place on the chorus where she does, it's like a very, I forget which part of the, which line it is, but there's like a very, she's soaring upwards and it's the instrumentation is very, very far away, and that's a real Bruno Mars trick. But because of what Adele's voice sounds like, it can easily become an Adele trick, whereas she's usually clustered within music. She's usually, I would say, almost smothered by music. There are moments on this record where she's not, but to me, because of how she sings, because of her gift, she can own it in a way that doesn't make it sound completely derivative.
Well, this is also, she's in full diva mode on this.
And
the other thing she said, I mean, this song does something, oldest trick in the book kind of thing. It goes up a key at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, people weren't doing the key change. We're bringing back the key change.
It was very, and in a very abrupt way. Like even just, there are people I think who use that shift in key. There's almost a measured pause before it. It's like, and now. And instead with her, it's like, hey. it just kind of like, it almost like car crashes right in. And the first time
I think of it actually as a launching ramp.
It feels that long to you? Because to me, it's a very short ramp the way it comes in. And I remember the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, this is wrong. Like, they played this too fast. Like, this was like a 4-bar thing that they played in 1 bar or something. But then the more I listened to it, the more I got comfortable with it. And I was like, oh, it almost feels like it's like a wink in a weird way.
It is.
Yeah. So I approve.
I say this with the greatest of respect. Adele has the same thing in her as chick flicks do, okay. Which is to say, there is some wavelength you, John, and I, John, are not equipped to receive being guys. That is.
Don't be essentialist, JP.
I'm sorry, we don't have a woman talking about this because Adele just unlocks something in people. And I
feel unlocked
in your own cynical, jaded
way. I'm out here crying to all I ask. What more do you need?
Well, it's true.
Catch me on the train next week weeping all I ask.
We all have our dualities.
Yeah, come find me on the N train.
But I do think it's a benevolent purpose. I mean, she's like this commercial juggernaut. She's like steamrolled everything else. I mean, the Billboard chart next week is going to be Adele, and there's going to be like 199 empty spots.
Yeah,
right?
Seriously, shouts to everyone who chose to release an album the same week as Adele. Like, you are the true heroes. You are the true MVPs. You are the true brave souls American pop music.
I'm sure it's not the Charge of the Light Brigade.
Well, that's true, but it's like shouts to, who is it, Enya and Jadakiss and like everybody who put out an album this Friday. Like, honestly, you're braver than I am.
But I don't think it's that crass. I mean, it's commercial, but it's not crass. I really think she's doing something for people.
Yeah.
You know, I hand it to her for that.
Well, let's let her do something for us right now. Let's go out on All I Ask, and I'm going to go get a Kleenex while this plays.
All I ask is if this is my last night with you. Hold me like I'm more than time.
Thank you. I want to thank John Perellis. John, I want to thank Adele. I want to thank the Smeezingtons. Okay. This has been the New York Times Podcast. John Perellis, thank you for being here. You can listen to us on iTunes and Audioboom and Stitcher and all those fun places. Check out our Spotify playlist. You can read John Perellis on Adele and John Caramonica on Adele at nytimes.com/music. Our producers are Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez. And come see us next week.